The opinions expressed in the following program are provided for information purposes only and are not necessarily those of CJAD 800 or Bell Media. The opinions do not constitute professional advice. Please contact your own renovation expert directly before making any decisions.
And good morning to you. It is 9:05, coming up to 9:06 CJAD 800 time. This is Home Improvement. Dan Laxer in for Ken Connors. And as luck would have it, we have both Walter Assey of Renovco and Jan Eakes in studio with us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I don't know how this happened, but I'm glad it did.
We got double booked. Now, nobody knew, I guess, that I was coming back for a bit. Walter would be with us again next week.
Right.
While I'm gone again. But since I saw him at the door, I said, no, we're not going to send you away, Walter. Let's bring you in and we'll deal with it together.
Why on earth not?
This is great. This is really fun.
Yeah, Dan said last week maybe Jan should come in and you should watch him do his work so you can do a better job next week.
Ah, that's it. Okay, so you're spying on me. Well, it's like when I go over to Renovco and I spy on Walter, so it works both ways.
I could just, it's probably very frustrating if you would, because you'd be watching them and going, I wouldn't do that.
No. It's really interesting that we come from different perspectives. I mean, Walter actually has a lot more experience than I do because he's doing it every day, all day. In fact, he never goes home, but does it every day, all day, and that is really great. One of the problems with that is you get so close to it, right?
That's true. That's very true.
That you can't see the other stuff. And I get to go off to conferences in Milwaukee and stuff like this and see all the new tools and all the new stuff and, you know, travel across the country, which allows me to see a broader picture. And when you put the two together, it really works kind of cool.
Yeah, you get to see the big picture with Jan. It's actually a fresh perspective for us, so it's great.
Yeah.
And sometimes he'll come into our office, bring us this nice new blade to try or new gadget, and that's fun because, you know, he gave us a ladder last time to try, and it was a ladder that was made to go on stairs.
Oh.
And we would try it, and then we would give him some feedback on it. And,
right.
So it's this kind of relationship we have, which is great, really.
A ladder if you're painting high up over a staircase.
Well, you want to put a ladder on the staircase, you know, with one step lower and the other higher. How do you do that? So somebody in Montreal invented a ladder like that, and we're looking to getting feedback before they got into the marketing.
Very nice.
So they come to me, and so I go out and people like Walter and say, well, try it and tell me if you killed three guys trying to use it or if it worked, you know?
Luckily, we only had one guy that fell down.
So there you go. And it wasn't you. Does that mean one side is telescopic?
Actually, it's a... telescopic in the sense that, yes, it adjusts, but it's really cool because it was just a foot that you set on the steps that is very solid and sets there, and then you just set your ladder into it. So it's not like having to be permanently attached to the bottom of the ladder.
Okay.
So really cool things like that. And that's what I spend a lot of time writing about that. And if you check my newsletter, you'll get information on that, or even the web broadcast that we do once a month.
So, Walter, when Jan comes to see you, it's like Christmas.
Oh, 100%. Oh, my God. Yeah, he comes with this nice goodie bag and just give stuff away.
So. All right. Well, we've got some people who want to talk to both of you. The numbers are 514-790-0800, Star Talk on Bell Mobility, and you can text us at 514-800 as well. Let's get started in the East End. Hi there, Ken.
Yes, good morning. My question is, I'd like to know what the distance an electrical fuse box has to be away from a water source, like a shower. I built a shower a number of years ago in my basement, and it is, roughly 6 to 8 feet away from the electrical panel, and I'm wondering whether that meets the code.
As I recall, it's 3 feet. What do you?
It's 36
inches. Inches. And really, 36 inches is, now you're talking about the electric panel. Nobody's really going to be standing in a tub full of water reaching out to the electrical panel. But the real idea is that your electrical outlets are close enough they don't get splashed on, and you're very unlikely to have a hairdryer that's close enough to fall into the tub. Of course, any electrical outlet in a bathroom has to be ground fault interrupted, which means ground fault interrupted, which means that if you do drop the hairdryer into a wet sink or a wet tub, it blows in like a 60th of a second. So you've only had time to get tickled, not shocked.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But your panel's 8 feet away, you're good.
I'm good. So the limit is how much, did you say?
3 feet. 3 feet.
3 feet.
Yep.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, so you're good.
One other question about this shower. I put it in a number of years ago, and it drains into... I have a gravity French drain, you know, where the pit, the level comes up in your pit and overflows down to the sewer. And I directed the drain from the shower into the pit itself.
Oh, why'd you do that?
And Walter's shaking his head, too.
The biggest problem that you have with that is one, it overworks your sump pump. Or, you know, your...
Well, I don't have a sump pump. It's a gravity system.
It's a gravity system. But you're flowing all this soap through there. And that's what's going to create a residue buildup. And soap is often organic, which means that you can create smells and other odors. Walter, anything else
100%.
To add to that problem thing?
You want to have that pit as clear as possible, especially these pipes. You don't want it to back up. And by you doing so, you're just introducing all these chemicals into the pipes, and that's going to create you problems in the future.
Yeah, because usually with a real drain pipe, that's a sewage pipe going out, taking all the drain, you get other water flow from the sinks and from toilets and from other things that helps to flush these things out and keep them going. But when you have this one shower that just goes in there and always full of soap, because that's what it's all about when you take a shower, except for Dan, he doesn't use soap.
Or a shower.
Or a shower, no, unless he really has to on Saturday night. But no, it's an accumulation, and it can be a real odor problem because it's just open down there.
Well, just we have had it in operation for about 30 years.
Okay.
We have never noticed any odor or anything like that. Usually what I do is periodically I just flush out the pit itself with a hose, and I just run for an hour or so, run water into it, and it's worked fine. We haven't... had any problems.
Okay,
recently I had a plumber into, there's a check valve on this system, and I just recently had him come in, and he opened it up and cleaned it all and put it back together again.
You're doing exactly what you need to do when we're saying that it's going to gum up, it's going to become a problem.
Yeah.
If somebody puts that in and never looks at it again, I guarantee you it's going to be a problem then.
Yeah, 100%.
But you're turned onto the fact that this is not quite right, so I have to do maintenance.
Yes, right. Yeah.
And as long as you're stuck with that maintenance, it's going to work. The problem is resale. The little old lady that buys your house has no idea that she's supposed to do that.
Yeah, that's
why the building code is designed to idiot-proof things like this. So that, and we have a lot of problems with homeowners, really creative people building nifty things into their house, and they really work as long as the homeowner is there. I mean, I always have the problem when I've had a place on the Plateau Mont-Royal. I actually kept a log, and I gave it to the guy I sold the thing to, because in this log it said, you're going to find hidden behind this panel, the junction for the front door switch. And all of these things that I knew about, but somebody else would not know. And he was very surprised to have this homeowner's manual that I had left behind that says the shutoff valve is actually hidden behind the third tile on the left.
But that's a great idea. I think every home should come with a homeowner's manual.
It would be good if you did that.
Yeah, the other thing is the hidden defects. You don't want to sell the house and then you forget to mention that little detail for the new homeowner. That's something they can easily sue you for, and then, you know.
Well, I know how to remedy it.
Yeah.
All right.
That's just to keep that in mind. Whatever you do in the house, just try to stick to the code just to protect yourself long term. And the code is really there to protect you and really protect your investment.
Mm-hmm.
It's not there to work against you or make you spend more money. There's a reason why they put the code in place, because it works.
Yeah, it protects both you and as Jan points out, anyone who picks up your home after. Ken, I hope that helps. Thanks so much for calling CJD.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Would you suggest that other homeowners do what you do, Jan, that we keep a log every time we do something new or of where...
Particularly if you have anything complicated that you added or that's somewhat hidden.
Yeah.
It's like I really, in my present house, my wife has a room that she does therapy work. And there's a floor button.
Mm-hmm.
The strange thing in the closet. And you step on the floor button and you have no idea what it does. But it turns off the whole ventilation system for 20 minutes if she wants silence between the house and this room. So it cuts all her ducts off.
Okay.
Okay, and gives her silence. But it automatically comes back on 20 minutes later because I know she's going to forget it. Well, the new guy that gets in there is going to sit here and pound on this button and say, what does that do? You know, and he has no idea what it does. But there's a whole damper system hidden back in the basement.
Your house has a cone of silence.
Well, it actually has a room that can be totally isolated. Someday we're hoping that when it gets sold to somebody else, it either becomes the granny suite or the teenage drum room, because it's totally soundproof for a whole. You could put a music group in there.
That's what it takes when you live with Jan.
Absolutely, that's right. When you live with me, yeah, that's right. Well, that's actually to keep my wife away from me.
Hope she's not listening. All right, it's Home Improvement on CJD. Dan in for Ken, and we've got both Walter Assey and Jan Eakes here to answer your questions. And there's lots of calls to get to. We'll get to those in just a couple of seconds. Welcome back. This is Home Improvement on CJD 800 in Montreal and broadcasting as well at CJBK 1290 in London. This week with both Jan Eakes and Walter Assey of Renovco joining us both in studio, or both joining us in studio. None of that makes sense. Let's go right back to the phones. Hi there, Diane.
Hi, how are you?
Fantastic.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I have a question for you. When I open my kitchen faucets, whether it's the hot or cold water, it starts to whistle, and then I have to reclose it and then open it again. Could you tell me what can cause that problem?
Well, actually, you might be surprised that it's very common. And if you go to my website and look up noise and plumbing, you'll see one that talks about kitchen faucets that whistle. The good news is it's a 20-cent solution.
Oh, really?
Yes, you like that, huh?
Okay, yeah.
Okay. What I want you to do, and many people listening have heard this a long time before because we talked about it often, but I want you to just blow air out of your mouth. Slowly close your lips. So you go, it just makes wind. Close your lips slowly. You can hit a point where you get that harmonic.
Yeah.
In a faucet, and this is like the you have separate handles, right?
That's right.
There's two different handles there. And so there's a washer in there, a rubber washer. And usually this happens to the hot water, but sometimes it happens to both.
Okay.
And the hot water washer, actually, the rubber gets hard faster because of all the hot water.
Mm-hmm.
But when they're old washers, they both get hard. And sometimes they get loose. There's a little screw that holds them in the place.
Okay.
So when they're loose and are hard and you get close to closing them off, it'll start to whistle like that. And sometimes when you open it all the way and come back down, it just moves the washer and it doesn't get stuck in that harmonic.
Okay.
And so what you're going to do is that you're going to turn the water off. You got to turn it off down
at
under
source,
the sink,
yeah,
or at the source, or mm-hmm, wherever you can. And then you simply remove the handle and you get a wrench or whatever out. Vice grips will work, but be careful. You could strip all the top part of that. And you unscrew the stem and the stem comes out. Now, if you don't have rubber washers, you've never done this before, you actually take that to the hardware store with you.
Okay.
And that way you'll get the right size.
Okay.
Because all you want is that little black rubber thing in the end.
Okay.
And it doesn't really matter if it's flat or if it's cone-shaped. They both work. A lot of debates as to which one's best, but they both work. And you just need one that fits snugly in there, and the screw goes back. And if you're missing a screw, the screw is probably down in the faucet still. And that's not cool.
Okay.
Now, if you have to get that out, here's what you do is now you got need two people. And one of them, you get a bucket. And you put the bucket over the faucet so that any water coming out hits the bucket. It's the bucket's upside down. And it hits the bucket instead of hitting the ceiling. And it goes back into the sink.
Okay.
And what you're going to do with the stopper in the sink, you want to flush out anything that's inside there. But you need one person because you can't hold the bucket and turn the water on and off,
okay,
at the same time.
Okay.
And you need this guy who stays at the water valve, says, turn it off, I left the bucket. Okay. So you got to be careful about that. But you flush it out. And so the same thing happens when we get sometimes some grime in there, some calcium breaks loose from old steel pipes.
Okay.
And we can flush out those old faucets. Now, if it all comes up, there's a screw in the end, the washer's there and it's just old, don't do all that stuff. Just go change the washer, put it back in your business, or go to the store first and buy a pack of miscellaneous washers for faucets. Mm-hmm. And in there will definitely be one or two or three or four that mm-hmm fit your faucet.
Okay, because there's different sizes.
There's all kinds of different sizes, okay, and thicknesses and roundness and all this stuff.
Okay.
And so that's why I say you either get an assortment pack at the store and then you've got some sitting around the house, or if you really just want to fix this. Now, by the way, usually when this happens in one faucet, it's about to happen in every faucet in the house. Because they're all the same age?
Mm.
Okay.
So it's a good idea to just take the opportunity.
So I just started my bathroom and then my bath also then?
What I like to do, well, yeah, if you have two faucets in your bath, same thing. Okay. What I like to do, if you're into this adventure this day, what you do is you turn the water off for the whole house and you work your way through the whole house. You can get them all new.
I change the washers anyways, even if they don't make noise
in
the bathroom.
Yeah, because they're cheap and you get brand new ones. But it's just they're all the same age from when the house was built.
Okay.
And or renovated. Mm-hmm. And so now if you change them all, because the hardest thing is getting your wrench out, figuring out how to do this. Get the first one off. After the first one's off, they go really fast.
Yeah, because you figured it out.
You got your learning curve.
So when you're changing your clocks and changing the batteries in your smoke detector,
change it. Well, it's less important. The clocks and the batteries, that all goes together. But changing all the washers. I usually, tasks like that, and if I have to because it's an emergency, you do one.
Okay.
But if you really have the time, because you're amazed at how fast the third one goes.
Yeah. Okay.
and then you say, hey, this is so easy. I'll do the whole house.
All right. Thank you so much for your advice.
Good luck.
Good luck with that, Diane. Thanks so much. Hi there, Lauren.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Good. Listen, I have a question for your guest.
Mm-hmm.
I have a combination heat pump and also electric heating inside the house. Which is now 6 years old. I'm off warranty, and it works well. I have no problems with them. But my question is to you is, do I really need to have somebody come do maintenance on these units? Now, you know, I've spoken to different people, and some say yes, and some say no. So my question to you is, what do I do?
What is it? So what we have is a heat pump, and the main system is all electric?
That's correct, yeah.
Okay, not a lot of maintenance to do on that.
No.
But the only thing might be a cleaning of the units, or the fan units in particular. Because where we really need maintenance is when either the heat pump is off balance and the gas is not working right, or the compressor is not working right, because it's a delicate machine and might need to be adjusted. An electric furnace doesn't need... Well, the only maintenance we really ever do on electric furnace is cleaning.
Yeah, the filter and the fan, pretty much.
The filter and the fan.
Well, yeah. The filter, obviously, I take care of regularly. That's not an issue. And I mean, the fan, I've never done it before, but I mean, if that's the only thing that needs to be done, I notice that I don't accumulate a lot of dust. And in the box, every once in a while, I'll take a look at the box. You know, the boxes in the floor to see if I've got a lot of dust in there. I really don't see a lot of dust in there either.
Actually, the most important thing to realize is if you do see dust, and if your filters are good, you're not going to be seeing a lot of dust there. Good. But if you do see dust, it's usually only in the very end where it has an elbow and it comes up. And so often this whole duct cleaning business, yes, it can be useful if you just finished a renovation and nobody closed the ducts off. But if you just have a vacuum cleaner with a hose, what you can get at is mostly where all the dust is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do that on intake grills and outtake grills, intake grills will be much dustier than the output grills.
Sure.
Because there's no filter. Okay. And so if you do your filters regularly, it's not much of a problem. If you're going to do the fan, you really want to make sure the power is off so that fan motor can't go on while you've got fingers nearby.
Oh, geez.
Okay? Because it's a big fan.
Absolutely.
And so if you're not really super comfortable, don't do that. Have somebody come in and do it for you.
Plus, your unit is only 6 years old, so you're not going to have any, you shouldn't have any problem with your compressor or anything like that in your heat pump. So you're okay for a while.
If you find that it's not cooling right or not heating right, that's, you know, you say, hey, it's not working how it used to.
Yeah.
Now it's maybe losing refrigerant or something like that. Now you need a technician to come in and do some measurements, and then he can tell whether there's really something wrong.
But at this stage, he's okay. All right, Lauren, thanks so much for the call. It's Home Improvement on CJD with me, Dan Laxer, Walter Assey of Renovco, and Jan Eakes. Back with more on the Home Improvement Show after the news. Welcome back to Home Improvement. I'm choking a little bit. Dan Laxer in for Ken Connors, broadcasting live on CJD 800 in Montreal. My goodness. And CJBK 1290 in London with Jan Eakes. And Walter Assey is joining us in studio from Renovco this week as well.
Sounds like we need to change a washer in your tongue.
We need to change something.
Getting a harmonic there. It doesn't work.
Okay. I need a new washer in my windpipe.
All right.
Let's get this caller on the line and I'll have some water. Good morning, Jerry. No, wrong button. Morning, Jerry.
What's
up, Jerry?
I need your help, please.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a 21-year-old tar and gravel roof.
Okay.
And I'm getting different estimates, But after I discovered, or people are telling me about it, you have this TPO material, which I heard is not the greatest. And they, maybe I don't have the proper term, but they have this membrane, different kind of a membrane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a flat roof. And I was wondering, which do you suggest?
Okay. Well, first of all, when we say flat roof, what we're really trying to do is say that it's not a steep peaked roof, okay?
Yeah.
Because no roof is really flat or the water would sit there.
Yeah.
Okay, so in Quebec, we have two kinds of flat roofs. One we call a basin roof, where it goes to a drain in the middle. You have that all over downtown Montreal.
Okay.
And what was really funny, I remember at one point some researcher in Ottawa was talking about how rare basin roofs were. And I phoned him and when I heard this and said, well, from where I'm sitting, I can see about 100,000 of them. So he says they're not so rare as that. The other is slanted to one side. So it works like a regular roof. The water comes off. You probably even want a rain gutter because it's all coming off on one side. But it's so low that if we were to try to put shingles on it, the water would sneak up under the shingles. And in fact, then we get low slope roofs. And we used to have shingles for low slope roofs in Canada. We don't have them anymore because they don't work well. They still use them in the United States. But when we get ice and snow, the low slope roof doesn't work. So we have to go up to a certain steepness before we can even use shingles. So there's this whole gradation of what you have in your roof. In your terms, if you already have a asphalt and gravel, then we're down where shingles just don't work. So now we have always some kind of membrane, or membrane, as they say in French.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the cheapest and the least expensive for installation is this felt membrane that's impregnated with asphalt, and then there's gravel laid over the top. And in fact, it's not just a piece of felt down there. Usually it's many layers and asphalt and layers and asphalt, and it builds up. And that's been our standard roof for almost all of Quebec for a long, long time, and it works very well. Now, when we get into modern membranes, which are often made out of rubber or elastomeric, TPO is a special material that is white, and so it's reflective. And in fact, if you're in some areas of Montreal, like Rosemont, you're no longer allowed to use a black roof.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be white, and so you have to go to the TPO. TPO is not good? Not true. They're all good. It's really a question of their installation, whether they're installed properly. When we first started putting membranes on, they were actually used in industrial settings on concrete roofs, and they were applied with a live torch. And when some industrial guys decided they didn't have enough work, so they're going to go do residential work, they went over and put their live torch and burned houses down.
Oh, God.
So the initial year or two of transition to doing those kind of roofs, hot torch roofs, on a residential house, there was actually a ban for a while. They had to be pulled off. Then they had to establish a protocol. And Walter knows all about protocols for all kinds of different things, like his disaster renovation. So the protocols become very important. And then the materials change. And basically, so we can protect a wooden structure from the flame of installing a roof. So all of that is just to really say the roofer is very important.
Yeah.
And a guy who simply runs out to Rona, grabs a bunch of Resisto off the shelf, which is a self-adhesive elastomeric, which is a wonderful product when it's used for what it's made for, and you try to do a roof with it, it may or may not work, or it may not last. And what did they do for preparation of the surface, the substrate? Was it really made to stick down? Did they do it at the right day, the right weather, the right temperature, the right overlap? So that's where you really need references on your roofers, because roofing industry in particular.
Now, the tar and gravel is a good product. The only thing with tar and gravel is the maintenance aspect, which is a bit more complicated. You want to make sure you have enough gravel. You want to make sure that when the roofer does his roof, they have to give you multiple plies, and they are actually doing these multiple plies, because we've been to roof inspection that they sell you in the contract 5 plies, but as a matter of fact, they only put 2.
Mm.
And truth be told, how often do you go up and you're going to check on the guys on a 30-foot high roof?
Yeah.
So that's one of the issues that you would have with the tar and gravel is... I always consult my clients to hire inspectors if they're not going to do it themselves.
That's right. There are actually inspectors that inspect the roofing job while it's happening.
Yeah.
They're not before and after inspectors so much. Yeah. They actually will supervise the job for you as a third party. What does that cost, Walter?
You know what? It's not that expensive. It's really not that expensive. Anywhere between, depending on the size of the roof and the length of the job, so anywhere between... $400 to $1,200.
Okay.
But I have to say, I mean, this is an important investment. It's protecting your whole house.
Yeah.
And that will be the best money you'll ever spend doing a roof.
And a good reputable roofer will have no problem with an inspector.
Well, let me tell you, I mean, to be quite frank with you, it's not really about, sometimes the roofer is very important and reputation is very important.
Yeah.
But we have to understand that this roofer also have workers. And not every worker in this team is doing necessarily a great job.
Okay, fair
enough.
Yeah.
So an inspector will actually go with a fine-tooth comb and he will look at all these details. Mm-hmm. And if there's something that is missing or something that was not done. So it's an extra pair of eyes on the job. Because more often than not, the bigger companies, they don't necessarily have all the time site supervisors at every given phase. Mm-hmm. Right? So, a reputable contractor, 100%, that's without saying, that's there's no doubt there. But having an extra pair of eyes on a long-term job, every time we have a long-term investment, bigger investment, or an important investment, you know, I find it's important to do so. Okay. The other thing with the TPO and the elastomeric roof, I just want to caution the listeners about one thing. You know what I find with contractors, like with painters?
Yeah.
If they don't know how to do something, they would usually knock it down. So a TPO, the guy that would knock down a TPO system,
yeah,
it's because he's been working with elastomer for the last 10, 15, 20 years of his life. And, you know, he's so used to it, so he knocks everything down. Not necessarily. So you wanna know about TPO, call a TPO roofer and ask him the questions and do the comparison yourself.
Well, and exactly along the same lines, that's why TPO gets a bad reputation, is it takes a different skill set and even a different tool set sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of roofers say, okay, you want TPO, I'll do TPO. I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'll do TPO. And they put it up, and it gets a bad reputation. And it's because it wasn't applied right. Now, a really good contractor, he's not going to be ticked off that you're putting an inspector on his back, right, Walter?
As a matter of fact, he'll be happy.
Yeah, this is what I was getting at.
100%. Because you know what? Basically, a good inspector, a good contractor, they work as a team.
That's right.
And you know, believe it or not, they actually learn new things from each other.
No question.
They give each other tricks, and you know, I see it all the time. It's actually a great practice. I mean, it's like a good example of that would be when I work with Jan. You know, we brainstorm on issues sometimes, and like he will bring up something or bring up something, and then, you know, it's just great synergy right there.
Yeah.
So where do we find an inspector?
There's few companies. I mean, there are a few companies. There was Trudeau Inspections. He sold his company. Now it's a bigger company, an American company that bought it. But I mean, if you just go on Google, there's many, many.
What do we Google?
Roof inspector. Yeah, roof inspectors. That's correct. Roof inspectors. And the great thing about these guys is that most of them don't do roofs. So they don't have any horse in the race. You know, they don't.
Yeah, okay. It's not, so they're not going to inspect the roof. Completely independent.
That's correct. So the guy just inspects roof. He does nothing else but do roof inspections.
Okay. I hope that helps you, Jerry. Thanks so much for calling the Home Improvement Show on CJD. I'm Dan Laxer for Ken Connors with Walter Assey and Jan Eakes in studio at the same time. Broadcasting here on CJD and at CJBK 1290 in London. More in a bit on the Home Improvement Show. Now from the CJAD 800 Traffic Center, here's Kira Yeager.
There is still an issue in the right lane on the Met westbound Saint Denis. It's causing a good 20-minute delay now, and you're backing heavily up to P9. And we're also now seeing a delay on the 13 South. We have a closure this weekend from the 40 down to Côte d'Alias on 13 South. Right now, about a 5-minute delay in the area as you are taken off onto a detour. The inbound Mercier is a little busy. 5-minute delay. The inbound Champlain as well is busy as you make your way toward the 15 North. There's a closure closure and a detour. So you're backing halfway onto the outbound Champlain at this time. You might want to opt for the inbound Victoria with no delay at this time. And also La Fontaine South is backing up to Yves Prévost. Friday, September 7th, 8 p.m., 7 Central. Join Stand Up to Cancer for the music, the laughs, and the inspiring moments. Tune in live. Let us know what you see on the roads. Call in your tips to Star 800. Your next report, 10 o'clock.
9:47 on the Home Improvement Show. Jan, what's the difference between fix it and restore it?
When you renovate to repair damage, you discover all the errors of construction and renovation. It's easy to just patch it once again, but it takes experience and creativity to make it right with permanent performance, to restore it. That's why I recommend Renovco. Quality work, quality products, and intelligently creativity, able to deal with any problems. RENOVCO.com, telephone 514-856-9993, and now with Air Miles Reward Miles.
Our remaining moments on the Home Improvement Show here on CJAD in Montreal and CJBK 1290 in London, with Jan Eakes, of course, and Walter Assey, our special guest in studio from Renovco, and Morgan from Chateauguay. Hi, Morgan.
Yeah, hi, good morning. How are you?
Good. How can we help you?
Question. Mm-hmm. I've got my basement open, and I'm changing my plumbing. I've done a lot of copper. I've done welding and stuff on the copper, soldering. But PEX, what's better, PEX or copper?
What's better, PEX or copper?
Yeah, which should I go to?
Well, they're quite
very easy.
Yeah, they're quite different, as you know, and they both are quite competent, because PEX is the one of the plastic tubings that has held its head above the water for so many years. Other things have come and gone and had problems, but PEX is really held in there for doing it. You do have to be able to do the PEX joints right, and there's a number of different systems. You have to know which system you're buying and have the tools to be able to do it right. Like one of the great systems that's just about the easiest is that you stick a tool inside the tubing or inside the... And it like expands and expands and expands the thing, and then you slip it over the fitting, and all by itself it shrinks back. That's really kind of cool, but it's got a double wrapping at the joint and other little details that have to be done right. Otherwise, it's a crimp. Used to be you had to have, what is it, 2-ton crimpers or something, mm-hmm. that you couldn't even get in under the sink. And I actually did some research on and found that there were 4 people in Canada who owned them. so it was like not a really practical system for anybody except a professional plumber in new construction, usually industrial,
yeah.
who was running through with that. But now they've got better and better and easier to work systems. What do you find in making that choice, Walter?
Well, there's also which municipality is doing work. And like, for example, in Westmont, they won't allow you.
To use PEX.
Yeah, they want you to use copper. So in older homes, if it's a historic restoration as well. So you have to research that a bit more before you get it done.
And I think we have to be honest that some copper fails.
Yeah.
And you do get leaks. One is the soldering changed when we went to lead-free solder. Mm-hmm. And it's much more difficult to get a good joint. You have to now get a hotter flame and get in and out faster and other details. Or you buy more expensive silver solder that works all the time if you can afford it. For a do-it-yourselfer, yeah. that's mm-hmm. not bad, but a pro doesn't want to spend the money. But he'll use silver solder for a 3 or 4 inch joint, a 3 or 4 inch pipe, because he can't heat it properly all the way around with the regular lead-free solder. But even I've had copper pipes that grew pinholes.
Yeah.
And you know, this was supposed to be good copper. But in that particular case, I actually traced it down to the layout of the elbows was such that I accumulated calcium in the corner.
Okay.
And it caused corrosion from the inside out. And we actually were able to document that particular one after I cleaned the mess up. took the piece to the shop, cut it open carefully, and looked at it with microscopes. But we found out the wall had gotten thin over the years. So they both work well, but I think that Walter's concern is a very important one, that you don't want to try to do the wrong thing in a municipality that has decided we're not going to mess with PEX. Mm-hmm. We only want copper.
You wouldn't think. I mean, I know for certain things you have to check with your city, like with the color of bricks
yeah.
and stuff, but you wouldn't think that something internal would have to be approved.
Oh, you'd be surprised. Some cities are extremely picky about almost everything. I mean, you know, like one of the things most people don't know is that they even want to sometimes micromanage the color of the shingles on your roof.
Yeah,
choose.
That's right.
They won't allow you to choose a certain color just because your neighbors decided to go with, you know, mm-hmm. with different color pattern. So definitely check, always check. There's especially in Westmount. I mean, we've had a case where it was a big plumbing job. So if you would have done it with specs, would have cost you thousands of dollars, and then you would have had to redo it back in copper. So, yeah, definitely verify.
Yeah, it's interesting because the building code applies in a general thing and becomes a minimum standard. Then municipalities have the right to pass bylaws. They not bylaws that allow them to make it more slack than the building code, but they can add things on top of the building code. And usually what happens is one inspector just has a grudge against plastic pipe because it burst in his house or something. And so now he's decided there's no plastic pipe in my whole domain. We get this particularly in country and municipalities where there's one guy that's the only guy that sort of knows the technical stuff, and it's all his personal decision, and it really becomes a pain. You have to come in with four lawyers and three technicians to convince him that you can know that this is actually an equivalent job. Mm-hmm. Technically, the building code allows for equivalencies. It breaks down at the municipal level where the inspector just says, no, I don't want it.
There you go. Well, good luck with your decision, Morgan. You should text us and let us know what you finally decide. This has been Home Improvement, CJAD 800 in Montreal, CJBK 1290 in London. Jan, you're on vacation next week?
Yes, I still am.
Enjoy. Walter, you will be here with Ken.
Yeah, you're going to be stuck with me one more week.
That's perfectly fine. Stay tuned for The Car Show with Lisa Christensen in just a few moments. And from 11 to noon, Montreal Eats with me and Irma Linda Beaucaire. I'm going to get coffee.